The W. Scottsdale employees on their loony general manager, Larry.
Yeah, he believes in Santa. He believes he's the real Santa.
Right now, celebrate the season by leasing the all-new 2019 Jetta S for $169 a month plus tax.
We even wrote a song about him. Larry, the screw loose car dealer.
VW North Scottsdale, your dog-friendly dealership. Get a leash on life. Scottsdale Road and the 101 and VWNorthScottsdale.com. $19.95 down plus fees, 36 months, 10,000 miles per year, and above average credit. Not everyone will qualify. An extra charge may be added at the end of the lease. Expires December 31st, 2018.
Welcome to the outhouse.
Did you always realize you were gay?
No, I just said I had great taste.
When did you actually come out?
How are you not a mess?
No. Well, I got better.
Did you ever yell at your penis?
It's already going bad.
Oh, wow.
Steven, did you listen to that episode?
I didn't listen to time.
This is really getting rusty.
Right. Did you have an exam?
No. No. But I'm sure I'll think of it today.
And this is the outcome.
I don't know what you're going to ask me. I'm excited.
The nature of our podcast deals with sexuality in some uncomfortable situations. We think this makes the stories authentic, personal, and relatable. With that said, thank you and enjoy the episode.
Well, my understanding is that I'll be telling my coming out story, or we'll be talking about my coming out and my life as a gay woman.
That's fairly accurate, yeah.
Okay.
It cracks me up. It's a podcast built on one thing only.
It's a very important podcast, though.
Well, I appreciate that. Right off the bat, TC said to call you a Republican.
Oh, my God. Now, those are fighting words. He knows I'm a hardcore Democrat. And well, I'm not shy about telling my opinion either.
So the podcast, yeah, it's called The Outhouse. It's the only premise is we have a person come on and share their out story or their relation to an out story.
Yeah, you know, and it's important. That's why I agreed to do this, because, you know, I think it's important for us to tell our stories, especially of those of us that have been around a while, you know, and it's I'm hoping that it's helpful to some in the younger generation that may be, you know, struggling, or, you know, to look at some of us that have been out a long time, maybe as role models, those sort of things, you know, that we're everywhere. So, and I'm very open and very proud and, as you know, very opinionated. So.
Well, I think that's a perfect lead-in, so let's go ahead and get going, and welcome to The Outhouse. I'm your host, Matt, and on the phone today with me is Donna. Say hi, Donna. How are you doing?
Hi, Matt. I'm doing very well. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. So, Donna, how would you say that we know each other? How did we come to know each other?
Well, your husband and I were in high school together, and he and I feel like we were very close friends, and we remained friends after high school as well. So
was there like a bit of separation, like just you go and you do your life, and then you're like, oh, Facebook, hey, I know you.
Well, you know, I've always been very fond of Terry, and I just love him to death. And when we first left high school, we remained in touch for a while, and then I eventually moved away to Dallas, so we kind of lost touch there for a long time. But when I was finally introduced to Facebook, I was kind of a late bloomer to Facebook. Terry was one of the people that I was really hoping to connect, so I actually searched for him for a while on Facebook, and I finally found him, so I was happy to connect with him many years later. So, yeah, well, I have a way of finding people when I really need to find them. So I finally found him. Like I said, I was very happy that we reconnected. So, and I've
Good
been glad to get to know you on Facebook as well.
So you're in Dallas now. What took you to Dallas from where you guys met or where you guys were going to school?
Well, I went to college in Memphis, and when I left college, I had an opportunity for a job at IBM Corporation, and IBM was not hiring in Memphis at the time, but they were doing some hiring in Dallas. So that's what brought me to Dallas, was to start my career at IBM, and that was 1984 when I moved here.
Well, I was going to ask when, but I was going to try and be a little bit more tactful. But 1984, IBM, that's full blown right there.
That's right.
Stock options? Just kidding.
I have a few, not a lot. After I was with IBM 25 years, another company purchased the division, so I'm actually working for a different company now, but I do have combined years of service between the two. I'm just coming up on my 35th year.
Congratulations.
Thank you, and I'm a manager, have a group of techs that report under me.
Let's get to the out story. How about that?
Sure.
About what age did you realize that you were, let's say, not straight?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm an open book, so nothing is going to make me uncomfortable. I'm very, very open. I actually came out of the closet, quote unquote, when I was in college. But, you know, I feel like deep down, I've always known that I was gay from a very young age. I mean, I was a tomboy, but it wasn't just that. I mean, I always, when I look back, I always had any crush that I ever had was on a female. It was always on females. I mean, Wonder Woman, come on, right? I mean, you know, you know, whether it was, you know, I didn't have crushes on the boys on TV. It was always, you know, Wonder Woman, Linda Carter. And then, you know, even female friends I would have crushes on. So, but it really wasn't until a little bit later when I was in college that I kind of started to better understand those feelings. So
just growing up, you kind of attributed it to being a tomboy, or how did you kind of handle doing that?
Well, you know, that's a good question, because I kind of knew it deep down, but I really didn't know what to call it, if that makes sense. I mean, I dated boys in high school, but it was always very superficial. It was never a real romantic connection. And I just knew, I guess, deep down that there was something different. I just didn't have a label for it. But, you know, looking in hindsight, it's very clear. But, you know, when you're younger, I didn't really, you know, you didn't see a lot. You didn't see gay people on TV. It just was hard to put a label on what it was. But I guess when I was in college, really what kind of, I think, helped me better understand is, of course, I'm a little older now. I'm more exposed to kind of, I had some friends who were gay in college, and they actually took me to my first gay bar. And it was like, as soon as I walked into that door of that club, it's like a light bulb went off on my head. It's like, oh, right. There it is. Okay, I kind of get it now.
Well, I was going to ask, where was the first person that you go, you know what, I bet?
Well, you know, when I was in high school, it was a small school, and there was some guys that I kind of knew were gay, and, you know, I always considered them friends, but there were no females, nobody that I could even look back on and that I was in, you know, went to high school with, I could say was gay other than myself. So I don't know, it still didn't just click with me at first, even though now I look back, it's so obvious, right, with the crushes I had on women. And I had a female teacher in high school that I had a huge crush on. So I won't name names. So, but like I said, it was really when I met I had made some friends that were gay, and they took me to the gay bar, and it was like, oh, okay. It literally was like a light bulb went on when I saw other people that were like me, I guess, is the best way I can put it.
Okay. So you're in college. This at this point, you're in Memphis. Uh-huh. Is this where the gay bar was?
Yes. And it was kind of a fun story when I was, you know, I had some gay friends. I didn't go to college with them. I met them outside of college, and we were in this bar. And the very first gay bar I went into, I ran into a friend of mine from college. And we kind of looked at each other. And at first kind of, you know, we kind of paused because, okay, we're in a gay bar. And I'm like, well, she's in a gay bar too, right? And at the time, we both were kind of like, oh, we're just here for the dancing and the drag show, right? It was a great drag bar, and they had great dancing. And she and I kind of started hanging out more and more, and we started going to clubs together for several months. And finally, I called her one day and said, look, I've got to tell you something. I'm pretty sure I'm gay. And she says, well, I am also. So we kind of funny that we, you know, we kind of helped coming out together by, you know, going to those clubs. And Memphis had some great gay clubs. George's was the bar you went to.
So for like a month or more, you're hanging out with the other lady, and you guys were both pretending like, oh, no, yeah, we're just here for the dancing.
Yeah, we were just kind of, we just didn't really talk about it. It was, and it was probably, maybe not a couple of months, maybe it was just, it's probably about a month before I finally approached her and said, look, I've figured it out, I'm gay. And that's when she said, yeah, she was too. And we actually dated for a little while, and she was the first woman that I ever kissed. And I got to tell you, Matt, as soon as I kissed her, there was no doubt from that point on that I was a lesbian. It was like for the first time in my life, I understood what the love songs were all about on the radio, right? It was like, everything started making sense to me, you know, because I had that real connection and attraction and felt feelings of, you know, love with a woman. And it's like, oh, as corny as it sounds, now I know what the love songs on the radio mean.
So is this the woman that you wound up coming out to? Would this be considered your first coming out?
Yeah, that was my first girlfriend. I mean, it was very brief. I mean, we didn't date very long, but yes, I would consider her my first girlfriend, for about lack of a better term. But we have since become very good friends, and I still keep in touch with her. You know, go on from there. Like I said, that she was the first person that I kissed, or the first woman that I kissed, first woman that I had a relationship with, even though it was brief. And from that time on, you know, I consider that's when I came out of the closet, when I admitted it to myself and out loud that I'm gay. And from that moment, I came out of the closet, the doors were off the hinges. I mean, from that day, I have never looked back. I've been out to friends from day one. I've been out to friends. I was always out at work. I was always out at IBM. I was very active in, you know, IBM was is a very good company as far as diversity, inclusiveness, and it's a very safe environment. So I was always open at work. It did take me a little bit longer to come out to family. That was probably a few years later, after I was in Dallas, before I actually came out to my family.
Sorry, do you have any brothers or sisters?
Yes, I have two brothers. I'm the middle child. I have two brothers. And I actually came out to my younger brother first. I told him first, and then to the rest of my family. And most, you know, they were pretty, overall, pretty accepting, I would say. Maybe not pretty accepting, somewhat. My mom at first was not accepting at all. It took her a long time to come around. Now, you know, what is that, 35 years ago, right? Or 36 years ago now that I came out, she's fully accepting now and very much part of my life. But it did take a while for my family to be fully accepting, especially my mom. So
my brother
never had an issue, you know.
Kind of from the outside, even though I was born in Dallas, I don't feel like I was really raised Southern. Do you think it was different because your family was Southern and you were from the South?
Yeah,
I don't know, because it sounds like you had a fairly decent coming out. I mean, was there any drama?
Well, yeah, from my perspective, no. I mean, I from day one, I've been very comfortable, very open, very out, you know, in public, wherever, I've been very open. I will say that being out and coming out in the 80s, generally speaking, was not easy. I mean, it was not, you know, in the 80s, being gay, especially in a state like Texas, was not easy, but I was still always open and out, even though it was not necessarily easy in public. I mean, and sometimes it was dangerous. You know, in the 80s, there were a lot of hate crimes in Texas. Like I said, my family, it took them a while, but I think it was helpful because I was already on my own. I already had an established career. So and I was far away from my family because they're still in Tennessee. You know, I was very clear with my family. If you don't accept me, that's on you. You know, if you want to be a part of my life, then you need to accept who I am. And that's, you know, it didn't take long for my mom to come around, but you know, she definitely wasn't happy about it at first, but she didn't have any control over my life because I was already on my own. Where I would caution people coming out to their family if they're younger and still living at home, and if they have any thought that their family might not accept them, to wait until they're, you know, out of the house on their own before they come out to their family. Because, you know, I think if I would have come out while I was still living at home, it might have been a different story. Because, you know, like I said, my mom was not happy about it, especially it took her several years to really come around. And then there were still times even throughout that there's been some rough patches with some of my family, and there's probably a lot of aunts and cousins and, you know, that don't know, you know, unless they follow me on Facebook, then they know. So.
Well, we can put a link to the podcast on there, and then they'll know.
Oh, yeah.
So when you said to your family, you know, you have to accept me or I'm out of your life, I think I'm paraphrasing there, but mm-hmm. how do you think you got to that point where you were that self-aware that you could put your foot down? Was it a confidence thing, or what got you to that phase where that was okay to say?
Well, again, that's a very good question, Matt. I think because I was a little older, I was a little older. I was in my 20s. So, you know, I was out of my high school phase. I had gained more confidence by then. I had a good career at IBM. I was self-sufficient. I think I've always been self-aware and always been, you know, I'm an honest person. I always felt like I wanted to live my life honestly. Part of it, too, was, you know, I think it's important, in my opinion, for gay people to be open and honest so people can see us, so we're visible. You know, I certainly wasn't going to live a double life. I didn't want the stress of that. So I don't know if it's just something, you know, ingrained in me. I'm not sure. And it helped that I had, you know, I had a lot of friends that were supportive. I wasn't in a really relationship at that time, but I just felt secure enough to, you know, that they needed to accept me, you know,
okay.
If they wanted to be in my life.
I'm hearing that your brothers are younger, your mom. How did your dad take it?
My dad has since passed away, but at the time he has always been accepting, you know, of as long as I'm living, you know, an honest, productive life, I'm a good person. All he wanted for me was for me to be happy. So he really never had an issue with it. I think both of them always deep down knew. I think a lot of parents know a lot of times, you know, when their children are gay, but my dad was pretty supportive. I will say that I never really had any issues with him. It was always my mom.
Do you think your issues with your mom was because you were the only daughter, or was it something else?
I think for her, it's partly a religious thing. She, you know, she was raised Catholic, and at the time, my parents were members of the Church of Christ, which is pretty anti. They're not very accepting of gay people, so I think some of that was religion. Some of it was just she's an old, you know, that generation.
Right.
And, you know, and not to get too personal, but a lot of what she thinks about is what other people think. You know, what are the people going to think if they find out you're gay? I'm like, I really don't care. That's their problem. So, but she's come a long way. Like I said, now she's very much part of, you know, I've been with my wife. We've been together 25 years. We're coming up on our
25. Wow.
Thank you. We're coming up on our 25-year anniversary this February. My mom has spent a lot of time with us, and she and Nicole are buddies now. So like I said, she's come a long way. Very accepting now. It just, you know, the first couple of years were a little tough, but we got through it. Similar with Nicole's parents. Her parents were probably much less accepting than mine or than my mom, and it took them much longer to come around, but now they've come around, and now they're very much a part of our lives. So
that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I had another question and I totally spaced it.
That's okay. Well, you know, and I wanted to say a few of the things about, you know, being open and out since the 80s.
Sure.
That's something I'm very proud of. And I guess I kind of consider myself an activist in some respects. I've attended 3 marches on Washington, gay rights marches. The first one was in 1988. And then Nicole and I have attended 2 in Washington, D.C. Always, and that's partly why, you know, we joked about earlier that I'm very political. And part of that is because I've seen in the 80s how tough it was. I mean, you know, gay people had zero rights. And in fact, in the state of Texas, there was a law on the book that it was illegal and you could be arrested for being gay. And that was on the books until 2005 when it was overturned by the Supreme Court. So I really feel strongly that it takes, if we want to make change, we have to, you know, first and foremost, be open and out so people are visible and people can see us, that we're productive citizens, we're tax-paying citizens, we're good people. But also we have to speak to our politicians for change in the laws. So, and I will say that finally being able to legally marry Nicole, it was one of the highlights of my life. I mean, we finally were able to legally marry on our 20-year anniversary. We were together 20 years before we could legally marry. And wow. Then it still, and that was in Hawaii. We had to go to Hawaii to get married because it was not legal in Texas. And it wasn't until the Supreme Court decision several years ago that Texas had to recognize our marriage.
So you didn't do like a renewal of the vows. You just said, fuck you guys. We did it in Hawaii. That's legal.
That's right. We have our marriage license. It's legal. And we had a holy union on our 10-year anniversary. We actually had a holy union where we had family and friends, and we had the minister there. We did our vows. We had a really cool reception with great music, a lot of 80s music, some disco. You know, my mom was there. My brothers were there. Both brothers were there. A lot of friends and family. Nicole's parents weren't there because at that time they weren't accepting yet. And that was 10 years into our relationship. We had this great holy union and this great party, but it wasn't legal. It wasn't legal till, you know, another 10 years. And we flew to Hawaii, had the legal marriage on the beach in Hawaii. And then several years after that, the Supreme Court made it to where Texas had to recognize it.
Did you ever think that it would become legal or recognized by this? Right?
Nope. Not in my lifetime. I was absolutely pleasantly surprised. But, you know, again, I think a lot of changes that President Obama, you know, some of the things that he did while he was in office, putting some fair-minded people on the Supreme Court, certainly made a big difference. Him being able, you know, I actually wrote a letter to President Obama right before he left office, sharing my story, thanking him for what he did and how big of a difference he made in the lives of people like Nicole and myself. And he wrote me back and said that, thank you for sharing. And that, you know, he kind of, what drove him to do some of the things he did was, you know, the impact on people's lives. And again, I go back to, that's why I consider myself an activist in some ways, because I look back in, you know, 1984 to now, it's like light years how far we've come. But we couldn't have done it without people fighting for it. And I'm hoping that we've made it better for the younger generation, that they don't have to struggle like we did. So if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I think the listeners will understand that as well. You want to talk to us a little bit about what was gay life like in the 80s?
Sure.
Was it like all Duran Duran and big hair? And
Yeah, I still say there's no decade like the 80s for music. I mean, you just can't
think of
the 80s. I know, right? Yeah, there was a lot of big hair. There was some Duran Duran. Yeah, it was. I don't know. One nice thing about, even though the state of Texas, it's always been somewhat difficult because it's a very conservative state. I think most people know that. But within Dallas, it's always had a very large gay community. There's actually an area in Dallas called Oak Lawn, a lot of clubs, a lot of restaurants that are gay owned. It's just a large community where a lot of gay people live. Now, we don't live there now, but I did when I was younger. You know, a lot of dancing on the weekends, but for the most part it was, you know, pretty boring. I mean, you know, I had a job, and I was really didn't get into a serious relationship until, I mean, I had girlfriends here and there, but my first real serious relationship was with Nicole, and you know, and that was 25 years ago. But it was a tougher time to be gay. I mean, we actually, you know, I just remember many times people driving by calling us, I can't even say the words, but just calling us ugly names. And there was some hate crimes, so we always had to be cautious. And of course, we were fighting through the you know, the horrendous AIDS epidemic at that time was just ravaging the community. So we had to kind of stick together and try to raise money and support each other through that time. You know, politically it was a tough time. Reagan being president, you know, he wasn't not helping the situation. I'll try to be nice, but so it was a more difficult time.
Go for it. Don't censor yourself. Go for it.
Well,
trying to get a feel for the time. So,
well, you know, Ronald Reagan did not only did he not do anything to curb the AIDS epidemic, he did everything in his power to, and many people and many politicians of that day, to not lift a finger for research or anything, because it was just affecting the gays, or, you know, it was just it was a horrible time. And I think he was a horrible president. So anytime somebody tries to say anything good about Ronald Reagan, I just shake my head and go, you have no idea how many people that, you know, he likely, it was just a horrible time as far as the AIDS epidemic. But like, there was
one chance to get to go ahead and get it to stop. And they just said no.
Well, I mean, it was so much discrimination against gay people, and that's because, and AIDS was really hit the gay community hard, especially gay men. And, you know, his attitude was, oh, it's just affecting the gays. They really didn't care. They just didn't care. Any other leader, when that epidemic first started, if they really would have poured funding into research and got the communication out in a global scale, I think the epidemic wouldn't have been nearly as bad as it was and still is, you know. And I think anything that helped curb that was, you know, a lot of people within the gay community that got the awareness out and the funding out that we poured into trying to help. You know, it could have been much worse if the gay community didn't do what we did to try to help understand it and stop it.
During those times, was there an organization, or how did you guys come together as a community?
Well, Dallas, like I said, Oaklawn, the area of Oaklawn, you know, was a community of gay people. But we also have a resource center that's still in place today. And I believe at the time it was called the AIDS Resource Center. Now it's just the Resource Center. So that was kind of a focal point. We had the Gay Pride Parade every year. We still have every year, and it's enormous, and it gets bigger every year. So a lot of a lot of funds were raised through that. And then just everybody, you know, you had a large community of gay people. I mean, all my friends outside of work were predominantly gay and lesbian.
It sounds like there was a lot of different ways that people could interact with each other and support each other.
And most of the time to meet other gay people, usually it would be within the community of Oaklawn, whether that's a gay bar or one of the restaurants down there. At least for me, that's where I typically would, you know, meet someone, would be in that area. So
let's shift gears a little bit and talk about work, and not specifically like the name of the company, but how was, I mean, you said you were out, but were you out at IBM?
Yep. I've been out since day one. And when I say out, I mean, I didn't like, you know, it wasn't like that was the first thing I said when I met people. But if somebody asked me something about, hey, what'd you do this weekend? I would be honest and say, oh, you know, my girlfriend and I did A, B, or C. So on our HR forms, we would have to list like a emergency contact or whatever and or significant other. And like I said, IBM was really good about, rather than just having spouse, they'd have the word significant other, you know, at the time. We weren't legally able to marry, but we would, you know, you'd have a significant other. So I've just always been open at my work. And everybody that knows me at work eventually will know that, you know, this is who I am. It's because it'll come up in conversation.
Were you involved at all in drafting some of the, not the HR documents, but the policies of the companies, and maybe the one that you're in now, to be a little bit more, I'm not quite sure. Yeah, I don't even know how to ask that.
I know what you're saying. Well, like, for example, IBM had diversity groups, and the gay group was called the Eagles, and it's still called the Eagles. And I told you about when we had those marches in Washington. One of the marches, I actually marched part of the Eagles organization. We had the banner that said Eagles at IBM, and that was our group that we marched with. And as part of that diversity group, you know, we could make suggestions to the company, different things like that. So in that respect, yeah, I think, you know, there was a lot of us that were open and, you know, part of that group, and company understood that there were a lot of gay people that, you know, just like any company. So the nice thing about IBM, it was always been the forefront of having like non-discrimination policies that included sexual orientation. Okay. I believe IBM had that before I joined the company. I think that's been in their policy since the 70s. If that gives you an indication. So
that's fantastic.
And then it's gradually added things like gender identity and, you know, other terms. Being visible and open at work, you know, maybe people that had never met a gay person before, I think that slowly changed attitudes for some people. You know, maybe some people that had some prejudice, well, after they meet Donna, well, you know what? She's all right. She's a pretty cool kid. So, you know, so you kind of change minds over time, and they see that I'm just as boring as everybody else. So, so same thing with our neighbors. You know, we first moved into the country down here. It's like, at first it's like, oh, who's moving in? And now 20 years later, we're, you know, just part of the neighborhood. Everybody knows us and loves us. We're just as boring as they are. We mow our yard one strip at a time, just like they do. So a lot of times, until people meet a gay person, all they know about us is what they hear their politicians say or what they hear the preacher say, which is usually not true.
That's funny you say that. Well, not funny, but a previous guest, he said that we really have to get busy writing our own story.
Yep.
Like, stop letting other people write our story for us. We got to do this.
Oh, absolutely. That's why I agreed to do this podcast, because exactly right. We just need to be more visible on a grander scale. So, and what I don't want is all the headway that we've made over the past, you know, 30 years. I'm very nervous about the current political climate, and that's probably another reason why I'm so vocal. We've made too many gains to go backwards, and I'm not doing it. I'm not going backwards.
I can't imagine going into a closet.
Well, it's not just that. It's, you know, now finally got the right to legally marry Nicole. I think people don't understand that can be reversed if we're not careful. You know, with some of the Supreme Court nominees that are being put on the Supreme Court now, if, you know, in the state of Texas is always trying to challenge something, they're trying to challenge things in the city of Houston right now for marriage rights. If that goes up through the appeals court and makes it back to the Supreme Court, guess what? That could be reversed, you know? So you've got the latest Supreme Court nominee that was put on the court that just said that he does not necessarily think that precedent cannot be overturned. So we have to be very, very careful that we're not complacent, and that we keep, you know, that I'm going to be an activist till the day I die. Let's just put it that way.
Gotcha.
And I agree. I don't want the younger community to have to go back to what we had to live through in you know, the 80s, even though the music was good.
We will agree to disagree.
Yeah. Oh, come on now. You can't tell me that the music is not better in the 80s than it is now. What those kids are listening to, right? I've turned into my parents. What those kids are listening to now. No, but
yeah,
the
80s
music was great. No, I just don't want the younger generation to have to go back to some of the challenges as far as some of the rights that we've gained, you know.
So I get what you're saying about, like, with the government, and I agree. I just can't imagine that the people as a populace, I just feel that we're on a direction and we just can't stop. I feel more accepted with my neighbors and people of the community than I do by my government. I agree with that. But it feeds into that. If they were to attack marriage and redefine it as just between man and woman, I feel we would have 1,000 times more support from our neighbors and friends than we would have, say, 10 years ago.
That is a true statement. I agree 100%.
So while the government currently is making a right, the whole nation seems to be moving more to a left. And I'm just picking left and right there, but just to illustrate, the country is moving forward on this, even though some people are digging in their heels. That time is coming. That's my political soapbox right there.
Well, and I agree that you know, the support is much more on our side now from a national scale or global scale even. But there's still a lot of people in this country, and trust me, I live in the state of Texas, so I see it all the time, especially from our politicians who have a lot of the power. I still see it, that it can happen. Matt, I'm telling you, don't get complacent, because the minority still has, I mean, they still have a lot of power. I mean, look at even our president has the minority of people that technically voted for him, but he still has a lot of power.
Right.
And he's making
and he's making
some pretty scary changes in some policies that are not benefiting the LGBTQ community. I can tell you that. I don't know. I'm just on guard. I don't want to see us go backwards. and I've just seen it, but I don't want to go back there.
Well, I appreciate that you're on guard. Love that. Thank you. Thank you for being an activist.
I'm just one little old woman in the Dallas area, though. We need it. And by the way, I attended the Women's March 2 years ago, too, the day after Trump's inauguration. I was one of the 500,000 people in D.C. for the Women's March, so I forgot to mention that.
Well, do you feel there's anything else that you haven't covered, or maybe something has reminded you something about your coming out story? Or
Well, let me think about it. I just want to reiterate that, you know, I'm really proud to say that I've had the courage to be myself, to be honest about who I am. And, you know, I hope that anyone listening to this podcast knows that it's okay to be out, to be yourself. There's always a lot of support around you within the community wherever you live. If you don't have the support of your family, reach out to your local LGBTQ community, and there's going to be support within there. A lot of organizations out there. I guess that's it. I mean, it's just, you know, proud of my life, and Nicole and I are very happy. Like I said, we're coming up on our 25-year anniversary, so I got to figure out what I'm going to do for that. Got any suggestions, Matt?
Trips. Trips are good.
Yeah, I think we might have, maybe we'll have to go back to Hawaii on our 25-year anniversary. Maybe that's what we'll do. So, but I do want to thank you, Matt, for inviting me. I'm very happy.
Are you kidding? Thank you. I mean, I'm always, I feel so privileged whenever anybody's willing to tell their story. I'm like, yes, let's make this happen.
Awesome. But I appreciate that you're doing the podcast. I think it's important. So.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And thank you for being on the podcast. Yes.
Thank you, Matt.
The W. Scottsdale employees on their loony general manager, Larry.
Yeah, he believes in Santa. He believes he's the real Santa.
Right now, celebrate the season by leasing the all-new 2019 Jetta S for $169 a month plus tax.
We even wrote a song about him. Larry, the screw loose car dealer.
VW North Scottsdale, your dog-friendly dealership. Get a leash on life. Scottsdale Road and the 101 and VWNorthScottsdale.com. $19.95 down plus fees, 36 months, 10,000 miles per year on above average credit. Not everyone will qualify. An extra charge may be added at the end of the lease. Expires December 31st. 2018.
You can find new and existing episodes wherever you get your podcasts or directly at theouthouse.buzzsprout.com. Want more? Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Outhouse Podcast. We also have a closed Facebook group where you can talk about the show and share in community. Got a story you want to share? You can email us at theouthousepodcast@gmail.com.
The Outhouse Podcast is a production of GMN Services, LLC. All content copyrighted.